This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome, curious minds, to the Security Nexus Deep Dive, your shortcut to truly understanding the complex world around us. Today, we're plunging into a topic that touches every single one of us, every moment of every day, whether we fully realize it or not. We're talking about the security of our nation's critical digital infrastructure. It's the silent backbone of modern life, really, and its protection is, well, it's paramount. Our mission today is to unpack why this digital foundation is so vital. We want to explore the rapidly evolving threats it faces and dive deep into the sophisticated measures being developed and deployed to protect it. We're here to extract the most crucial nuggets of knowledge from a stack of incredible sources, cutting-edge research papers, pivotal government reports, expert analyses, all to make you profoundly well-informed and hopefully spark more than a few aha moments of the hidden complexities of our interconnected world.
Yeah, and what truly captures the imagination in this field, I think, is just how inextricably linked our physical world has become with its digital twin. This deep dive focuses intensely on the cyber components of critical infrastructure. We're examining everything from the complex control systems that manage our energy grids to the vast communication networks that power daily life and, you know, the intricate supply chains that support them all. We'll be connecting the dots between highly technical vulnerabilities and the broader implications for national security, public safety, and economic stability.
Right. We'll be drawing essential insights from groundbreaking works by authors such as Jemmy M. Carroll, Tangsin Cai, Muhammad Jamshid Khan, and Rishabh Gupta. We'll also be leveraging pivotal reports from key government bodies like the U.S. Department of Energy, or DOE, and the National Security Agency, NSA. It's a truly comprehensive look, isn't it? Safeguarding what makes our modern society run and thrive. And before we dive in further, just a quick note for those of you eager to explore strategic security topics even more deeply. If you're looking for strategic advisory, education, or public engagement on things like cyber threats, hybrid warfare, strategic security policy, be sure to visit thesecuritynexus.net. They're a Maryland-based national security consultancy, really dedicated to informing, educating, and empowering both professionals and the public through clear, accessible, actionable knowledge. They offer everything from podcasts and blogs to training and consulting. Worth checking out. So with that crucial context established, the obvious next step is to truly understand. What exactly are we talking about when we say critical infrastructure and key resources, and why is it so fundamental to our daily lives? One, the foundation. Understanding critical infrastructure and digital interdependence. Okay, let's begin by clearly defining what constitutes critical infrastructure and key resources, often shortened to CIKR. The National Strategy for Homeland Security, issued by the Office of Homeland Security way back in 2002, laid out a foundational truth. It said our society and modern way of life rely profoundly on networks of infrastructure, both physical networks such as our energy and transportation systems, and virtual networks such as the internet. That statement, made over two decades ago, really sets the stage, doesn't it? It highlights that our vulnerability isn't just about tangible assets like power lines or bridges, but equally about the invisible yet vital digital connections that enable them to function. It really underscores how deeply intertwined these two realms are.
Absolutely. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the destruction or even significant disruption of these critical elements, as starkly highlighted in the National Strategy for the Physical Protection of Critical Infrastructures and Key Assets from the White House in 2003, could lead to catastrophic consequences. I mean, we're talking large-scale injury, widespread death, or profound damage to national prestige and public confidence. Think about the cascading implications. It's not merely about immediate physical harm. It's about the ripple effects on societal function, public trust, and a nation's ability to maintain its basic services and, well, perceived stability. This isn't solely an economic or technical issue. It's fundamentally a matter of national resilience and morale, affecting every citizen's sense of security and well-being.
Yeah, the 2003 strategy paints a truly vast and comprehensive picture of what it considers critical sectors. It illustrates just how deeply intertwined these elements are with our daily existence. Yeah. We're talking agriculture and food, which encompasses a staggering 1.9 million farms and 87,000 food processing plants, literally the foundation of our sustenance. Then there's water, with 1,800 federal reservoirs, 1,600 municipal wastewater facilities, absolutely crucial for public health. Public health itself includes 5,800 hospitals. Emergency services covers 87,000 U.S. localities, our immediate responders. The defense industrial base involves 250,000 firms across 215 distinct industries, supplying the very sinews of our national defense. Telecommunication, the digital backbone, boasts 2 billion miles of cable. Imagine that. And of course, energy, the lifeblood that powers everything else. That's an immense scope. It affects literally every single aspect of our daily lives.
It really is immense. And within that truly monumental scope, Tiang Sing Kai, in their illuminating 2018 article, Energy Infrastructure Security in the Digital Age, further breaks down the energy infrastructure itself into its key segments, electricity, petroleum, and natural gas. And just to give you a concrete sense of the scale, the U.S. electricity segment alone encompasses over 6,413 power plants. It's a mix of traditional utilities and independent power producers. Kai details that nearly half our electricity, around 48%, still comes from combusting coal, which mostly relies on rail transport. So you immediately see that interdependency with transportation.
Right.
Another 20% comes from nuclear power plants, 22% from natural gas. The rest is hydroelectric, oil, and rapidly growing renewables like solar, wind, geothermal. And this heavy reliance on an extensive network of pipelines for petroleum and natural gas also underscores the deep, often invisible interdependencies across these critical sectors. Any significant disruption to one can quickly cascade into others, creating widespread systemic impact across the entire nation.
Okay, here's where it really starts to get fascinating and maybe a bit unsettling. The DOE's 2022 Cybersecurity and Digital Components Supply Chain Deep Dive Assessment, written by Charlene Caddy and her team, explicitly highlights that as the energy sector has become increasingly globalized, complex, digitized, and virtualized, its supply chain risk for digital components has evolved and significantly expanded. It's no longer just about the physical flow of energy, is it? It's the hidden digital arteries, the bits and bytes of software and firmware that control and manage it all. This shift means the vulnerabilities are now embedded at a, well, microscopic level throughout our critical systems.
Yeah, and that naturally raises an important question. What exactly are these digital components that the DOE report is referring to? They provide a broad and comprehensive definition. It encompasses all digital elements present across the energy sector supply chain. So this includes firmware, which is the permanent software programmed into read-only memory. It provides low-level control on a device's specific hardware. Think of firmware as the core operating system embedded directly into a device, like the code that tells your smart thermostat how to regulate temperature.
Right, at a very basic level.
Exactly. Or a power grid sensor, how to collect data. Any component with storage, integrated circuit hardware, or programmable controls uses firmware. Then there's software itself, the higher level applications that run on the system, performing functions, processing data. We also have virtual platforms and services like cloud-based or on-premise platforms that host applications, perform services, store data. And finally, data itself, the raw information used as inputs and outputs for software processes. It's a definition that covers everything from tiny lines of code in a microchip to vast oceans of information flowing through the grid. Every digital touchpoint becomes a potential vector for attack.
So what does this all mean in practical terms? It means that even seemingly purely physical components, like those massive power transformers you see, they typically include integrated firmware and are operated with software. This deep dive specifically zeroes in on the cyber components of such physical systems. It's a crucial distinction, isn't it? Our vulnerabilities aren't limited to the pure digital realm of the internet, but are now embedded deeply within the very physical machinery that powers our homes and industries. This convergence means a digital attack can have very real, tangible, destructive physical consequences.
Absolutely. And the convergence of information technology, or IT, which includes typical office systems like email, admin networks, data centers, and operational technology, or OT, which consists of programmable systems or devices interacting directly with the physical environment. That convergence is a critical factor here, as the DOE report notes. Think industrial control systems, or ICS, used for managing power grids, pipelines, manufacturing processes, even traffic lights. This increasing interconnection and remote operation of previously isolated systems significantly amplifies existing vulnerabilities. What was once protected by physical air gaps or isolation is now bridged by digital networks. This opens up entirely new attack surfaces and makes these systems accessible to a new generation of sophisticated threats. Two, the evolving threat landscape.
Okay, now that we've grasped the immense scope and deep interdependencies of critical infrastructure, the natural and maybe the most urgent question is, what are the evolving threats specifically targeting these vital systems? How do they impact us? Mohammad Jamshid Khan, in his insightful 2023 work, Securing Network Infrastructure with Cybersecurity, makes it really clear. Cyber threats are not static. They are constantly evolving, originating from an ever-diversifying range of sources, like direct hacking, various forms of malware, deceptive phishing schemes, and cunning social engineering tactics. It's truly a constant arms race against increasingly sophisticated adversaries.
Yeah, and the Protecting Critical Infrastructures, Key Assets, and Borders, sourced from 2006, broadens this perspective even further. It reveals that while our minds often jump to anonymous external hackers, the reality of the threats is far wider and more complex. It encompasses a diverse range of malicious actors and unforeseen circumstances. This includes highly sophisticated criminals seeking financial gain, state-sponsored spies engaging in espionage or sabotage, disgruntled employees with insider access and grievances, and even less malicious but equally disruptive factors like natural disasters, accidental errors, or simple human mistakes. This comprehensive view really highlights that our defense strategies must be multifaceted and dynamic, addressing not just external digital attacks, but also internal vulnerabilities, human factors, environmental risks. It's a holistic challenge.
And this truly underscores a critical point. The human element is just as crucial, maybe even more so, than the technological when it comes to defending our critical systems. A perfectly patched and hardened system can still be compromised by a single misstep, a moment of inattention, or a cunning social engineering ploy. It's truly a nightmare scenario for any CISO, right? You spend millions on cutting-edge tech, but one click on a bad link, one convincing phone call, and it can all unravel. It highlights just how complex the defense really is. Let's delve into some of the key types of cyber threats and their impacts, as detailed by our sources. Mohammad Jamshid Khan, in his 2023 paper, defines malware as any software specifically created to damage computer systems, networks, or individual devices. This is a broad category: viruses, worms, trojans, spyware, adware, and the increasingly prevalent ransomware. Malware typically exploits existing vulnerabilities, often spreading through infected email attachments, unpatched software, or by impersonating legitimate websites. Once unleashed, it can cause widespread chaos, result in significant data loss, or even hold entire systems hostage. It's a truly adaptable and insidious threat.
Mm-hmm. Following on from that, denial of service, or DDoSes, attacks are another common and highly disruptive threat Khan outlines. These attacks overwhelm target systems or networks with a flood of traffic from multiple sources, effectively denying legitimate users access to services, shutting down online operations. The impact can be severe and immediate lost revenue for businesses, severe reputational damage, decreased customer confidence. Imagine a power grid control system being hit by a DDoS attack, preventing operators from managing electricity flow.
Yeah, terrifying.
Or an emergency services communication system incapacitated during a crisis. The consequences can be far-reaching, even life-threatening.
Then there are man-in-the-middle, or mid-AM, attacks. Khan describes these as particularly insidious. An attacker cunningly intercepts and manipulates communication between two parties without their knowledge. This might involve creating fake Wi-Fi access points or using phishing to trick users onto a compromised network. Once positioned in the middle, the attacker can silently steal sensitive info like login credentials, financial data, or even actively alter the data being transmitted, potentially leading to grave miscalculations in critical systems. It's like someone secretly listening in and changing your words without you knowing.
And phishing attacks, as Khan explains, are widespread and highly effective. The term phishing itself apparently originated back in 1996 from hackers stealing AOL accounts by scamming passwords.
Wow, that long ago.
Yeah. It's a clever combination of technical methods and sophisticated social engineering. Deceptive emails or websites are meticulously crafted to appear legitimate, tricking individuals into revealing sensitive information. Passwords, credit card numbers, internal network credentials. The impact ranges from identity theft to significant financial losses, and it can even be the initial foothold for much larger attacks on critical infrastructure.
And closely related, we have unauthorized access. This can happen intentionally, like a hacker exploiting a known vulnerability or a misconfigured system, or accidentally due to human error, like misplacing credentials or failing to secure a database. Regardless of how it occurs, unauthorized access can lead to devastating consequences: data breaches, system disruption, malware propagation, severe reputational damage. Attackers often exploit known vulnerabilities or use stolen credentials to get in, then move laterally within the network to access more valuable assets.
The 2006 critical infrastructure source gets into something particularly concerning: blended cyber threats, where spammers, malware writers, and hackers combine methods to bypass multiple security controls simultaneously. But what's even more alarming, especially for critical infrastructure, is the concept of a blended cyber-physical attack.
This sounds bad.
It is. It's a horrifying scenario where an attacker might first penetrate a digital control system to cause a physical event, like starting a fire in a chemical plant or overloading a power substation, and then simultaneously launch a physical attack targeting emergency responders en route. This aggravates the damage and severely hampers recovery efforts. This kind of multi-domain attack represents a truly terrifying and complex challenge for national security.
And finally, a highly sophisticated threat, Khan highlights: botnets. These are essentially networks of bots, PCs, or other connected devices infected with malicious software. A hacker controls them remotely as a collective. These vast networks are then orchestrated to coordinate massive cyber attacks, distribute malware, send spam, launch large-scale phishing scams. Just to give you a sense of scale, McAfee detected 28,000 distinct botnets back in 2005 alone, a tripling from the year before. These aren't isolated incidents. They represent organized global operations with immense destructive power.
And the DOE's 2022 assessment provides stark real-world examples that powerfully underscore these growing threats, especially the increasing number and sophistication of attacks targeting energy systems over the past 5 years or so. Consider December 2016, the Ukraine power grid, the first confirmed cyber attack directly against an electric grid, shutting down power for hundreds of thousands in winter. Then, December 2017, a cyber attack on a safety system halted pipeline operations at Saudi Aramco. And perhaps most famously, December 2020, the sophisticated Russian software supply chain operation targeting SolarWinds. It exposed roughly 18,000 customers worldwide, including numerous U.S. government agencies and critical infrastructure entities. That was a profound wake-up call. It showed how routine software patching could be weaponized on an unprecedented scale.
And the attacks just kept coming, illustrating the relentless nature of these threats. May 2021, the Colonial Pipeline Company, remember that? Largest fuel pipeline in the U.S., hit by ransomware, crippled operations, led to widespread fuel shortages and panic buying on the East Coast. That wasn't just digital. It had immediate, severe, real-world impacts.
Exactly. Then, November 2021, Vestas, the world's largest wind turbine manufacturer, hit by ransomware. Forced IT system shutdowns globally. These incidents collectively underscore the rapidly growing sophistication of adversaries and their increasing willingness to target critical infrastructure, often by exploiting vulnerabilities hidden deep within the cyber supply chain. As the U.S. intelligence community noted in its 2021 annual threat assessment, state-sponsored hackers have compromised software and IP service supply chains for espionage, sabotage, and pre-positioning for warfighting. Russia, for instance, has repeatedly used cyber attacks on power grids as a precursor to kinetic attacks in Georgia and Ukraine.
It really highlights the direct national security implications of seemingly digital attacks. 3. Vulnerabilities in the digital supply chain.
Building on those threats, the DOE report by Caddy et al. From 2022 makes an absolutely profound, almost chilling statement. Quote, "All digital components in U.S. energy sector systems are vulnerable and may be subject to cyber supply chain risks stemming from a variety of threats, vulnerabilities, and impacts." This isn't theoretical. It's a pervasive reality across the entire energy sector industrial base, or ESIB. Electricity, oil, natural gas, renewables, everything. It means literally every digital piece, every line of code in every system is a potential entry point. The supply chain itself is a critical battleground.
And what makes this even more challenging is that this vulnerability isn't confined to just one stage. It extends throughout the entire software development lifecycle, the SDLC, from initial design through development, acquisition from third parties, implementation, operation, maintenance, even those seemingly routine post-installation updates. This means a subtle flaw or malicious insertion introduced early on, maybe years ago, can persist undetected for a very long time, making it a critical long-term point of concern and a constant target for sophisticated adversaries.
Right. And one of the most significant risk factors in this extended supply chain is the increasing reliance on foreign suppliers for critical digital components. The DOE report specifically highlights that software for both IT and OT systems is increasingly developed overseas, often due to skilled labor pools and lower wages. This reliance, while maybe economically advantageous, creates inherent risks, especially from suppliers owned, controlled by, or subject to the direction of a foreign adversary. The devastating SolarWinds compromise is a serious recent example of deliberate manipulation within the software maintenance supply chain by a well-resourced nation-state.
Yeah, that was huge.
It profoundly demonstrated how even routine software patching cycles designed to enhance security can be subtly weaponized.
Adding to that challenge is the incredibly opaque nature of supply chains for these cyber components. The software and firmware code operating these systems is enormous and highly complex. We're talking applications with hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions of lines of code, thousands of interconnected subroutines, often nested within each other. The sheer scale, complexity, the layers of third-party components, it makes it incredibly difficult, almost impossible, to understand the full provenance of all components and to identify potential vulnerabilities hidden deep within the code or libraries. You simply can't visually inspect everything going into these vital systems. You end up relying on trust, often blind trust.
Mm-hmm. Furthermore, the energy sector operates within a highly dynamic technology marketplace, characterized by a high degree of mergers and acquisitions, M&A activity. New innovators emerge, get bought by larger companies. Mature business units get bought and sold. These acquisitions often result in rebranding, complex integration of digital components into larger product suites, which can unfortunately obscure the original provenance of these subcomponents.
Makes it hard to track.
Exactly. This constant M&A activity can lead to rapid, hard-to-track changes in foreign ownership and control, which adversaries actively seek to exploit and obfuscate. When a company is acquired, the new owner often gets immediate access to all source code, sensitive customer data, ongoing access to customer systems for maintenance, creating new, often unforeseen points of vulnerability across the ecosystem.
Which leads us to what the DOE report calls concentrated cyber risk. Critical infrastructure, including energy systems, frequently relies heavily on a limited number of strategically important, often ubiquitous software components. While maybe not a single point of failure in theory, compromising just one widely used component can have an outsized systemic impact. The SolarWinds Orion platform compromise is the prime, devastating example. A Russian intelligence service targeted an obscure administrative software component used broadly across governments and critical industries. Other similar attacks demonstrating this risk include Codecov's Bash Uploader script, Cassia Limited's VSA software, and Apache's Log4j library. These attacks consistently target software that is broadly used, often accesses network credentials, runs below the main application layer, and critically, often goes unpatched for long periods due to its foundational nature or difficulty.
What's also profoundly highlighted by the DOE report and often overlooked is that data itself presents a significant cyber supply chain risk. Similar to the risks with software, the entire data lifecycle creation, curation, correlation, used especially as inputs for advanced analytics and AI, presents myriad vulnerabilities. Significant research over the past 5 years has chillingly demonstrated that malicious manipulation of data sets used in AI training can cause profound, subtle, and nearly impossible to detect system failures in the models themselves.
Wow, so the AI itself can be poisoned.
Effectively, yes, which raises an absolutely critical question for national security. If data is now a strategic national resource, especially with AI growth, how do we secure its integrity throughout its often global, complex supply chain? The report notes that requirements, standards, and policies for making critical data-reliant operations cybersecure are lagging significantly behind the tech pace, leaving a substantial, urgent gap in our national defenses.
This is particularly critical because pre-trained AI models, which are commercially available and widely adopted for a vast range of tasks, object detection, natural language processing, they're developed on public or private data sets. But their full digital supply chain, exactly how and on what data the model was developed and trained, what transformations happened, is typically not disclosed to end users.
Right, it's a black box.
Exactly. This profound lack of transparency makes managing the associated risks, or even understanding potential vulnerabilities or biases embedded within these models, nearly impossible for critical infrastructure operators. You're effectively relying on a black box for crucial, potentially life-sustaining functions. 4. The federal response. Key agencies, initiatives, and standards. Okay, given the immense scope, the interconnectedness, the severe vulnerabilities, the challenge of securing our critical digital infrastructure is just too vast for any single entity. It requires a truly coordinated interagency effort across multiple federal agencies, which is what we are seeing evolve, right?
Absolutely. Tiangsun Cai in Energy Infrastructure Security in the Digital Age points out that our understanding of national security must be holistic. It encompasses not just military and political dimensions, but also economic, environmental, and profoundly cybersecurity. It's integrated. Cai highlights how the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, specifically categorizes energy infrastructure into electricity, petroleum, and natural gas, meticulously emphasizing the deep interdependencies these sectors have with vital transportation systems. For example, coal for power plants travels by rail. Oil and gas pipelines crisscross the nation, reliant on stable physical and digital controls.
All right.
This interconnectedness means no single agency or sector can manage its security in isolation. A threat to one is a threat to all.
And this interdependency extends broadly across government responsibilities. The Department of Agriculture isn't just about farming. It's responsible for our entire food supply safety. The Department of the Treasury oversees banking and finance stability. The Department of the Interior protects national monuments. The U.S. Government Accountability Office, GAO, has noted that all 8 critical infrastructure protection initiatives they track are being actively addressed by federal agencies, DHS, DOD, HHS, all citing extensive activity in each area. It's a comprehensive, albeit incredibly complex, web of interlocking responsibilities. Each agency plays a vital role.
Focusing now on some key agencies and their specific efforts. The Department of Energy, DOE. As Tiangsun Cai explains, DOE works incredibly closely with both DHS and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, to ensure security and resiliency of our energy assets. Their mission is broad and absolutely critical, supporting national critical infrastructure protection, analyzing vulnerabilities, preparing for energy emergencies, conducting emergency energy operations, and they're deeply involved in developing and maintaining national energy cybersecurity programs. It's a massive undertaking.
And the DOE, as Cai details, doesn't just do high-level strategy. They develop practical software tools and initiatives, too, like the eGuide Toolkit, a resource to help organizations implement energy management systems step by step. There's also the Plant Energy Profiler, PP, a software tool helping plant managers understand energy purchase and consumption, pinpoint savings. Plus, the Energy Information Administration, EIA, within DOE, uses IT extensively for crucial data collection, analysis, forecasting, and disseminating vital energy info. Consider this. Over 2 million people rely on EIA's information online monthly. That shows its wide reach and reliance on secure digital systems.
Mm-hmm. Building on that, the DOE's 2022 Cybersecurity and Digital Components Supply Chain Deep Dive Assessment details several ongoing, highly specific programs, all designed to aggressively address cyber supply chain risks in the energy sector. There's the Energy CyberSense program, a voluntary initiative mandated by the 2021 Infrastructure Act. It tests the cybersecurity of energy sector products and tech, especially industrial control systems, before deployment.
So testing beforehand. Good.
Yeah. Then there's cyber vulnerability testing for industrial control systems, or Citrix, a dedicated DOE program for in-depth vulnerability testing and digital subcomponent enumeration, specifically for OT and ICS. Its findings are directly integrated into Energy CyberSense, creating a feedback loop. Another crucial effort is the Securing Energy Infrastructure Executive Task Force, a pilot program bringing together national labs, federal agencies, academia, industry, to proactively identify new vulnerabilities and evaluate emerging defense tech. They're also working on the Energy Sector Software and Hardware Bill of Materials Proof of Concept, SBIM-POSI.
SBOMs, yeah, those are important.
Absolutely. A vital partnership with DHS and national labs to dramatically accelerate visibility into the software supply chain and sub-tier suppliers, aiming to prevent future SolarWinds-like compromises by making digital components transparent. And finally, the Clean Energy Cybersecurity Accelerator, CECAS, launched with NREL, provides a crucial third-party environment for testing and developing secure, renewable, and modern grid technologies, ensuring our clean energy future is also secure. It's a comprehensive, multi-pronged suite of initiatives. Shifting to another key player, FRIC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. As Cai highlights, it's an independent agency with immense regulatory power over interstate transmission of electricity, natural gas, oil. They also license hydropower projects and ensure safe operation of LNG terminals. Crucially, EverIC's Office of Energy Infrastructure Security, OEIS, provides leadership and expertise to proactively identify and mitigate risks to FRC jurisdictional facilities, from cyber attacks, physical threats, even electromagnetic pulses. Their independent oversight and focused efforts are vital for maintaining integrity, stability, security of these critical energy flows.
Your Department of Homeland Security, DHS, really acts as a central coordinating player across this whole landscape. The 2006 Critical Infrastructure Source notes the groundbreaking National Infrastructure Protection Plan, NIPP, was released by DHS. This plan served as a comprehensive framework identifying critical assets, assessing vulnerabilities, prioritizing protection programs across all critical sectors, basically the national blueprint for safeguarding vital infrastructure.
And beyond the NIPP, DHS actively engages and collaborates with industries to define security thresholds and develop specific requirements for different sectors, including telecommunications. In June 2003, the National Cybersecurity Division, NCSD, was established within DHS, its mandate. Coordinate national cybersecurity strategy and foster essential public-private partnerships. This division oversees key initiatives like the U.S. Computer Emergency Response Team, U.S. CERT, providing incident response support and threat analysis, and the Information Sharing and Analysis Center's ISACs, which are crucial for collaborative defense. Now, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, plays an absolutely crucial, often understated role, setting the foundational technical standards and guidelines underpinning much of our national cybersecurity efforts. The DOE report specifically references NIST's comprehensive cybersecurity supply chain risk management practices for systems and organizations, a vital blueprint. However, it's important to note a significant point. While highly influential, NIST standards are generally voluntary for private sector operated systems.
Ah, voluntary. That seems like a potential gap.
It can be. This voluntary nature, while promoting flexibility, can sometimes create critical gaps in overall security adoption across the ecosystem. Not everyone might fully implement these best practices.
Mohammad Jamshid Khan, in his 2023 work, strongly advises referring to NIST publication guides for IT security as foundational resources. And building on that, Rishabh Gupta, in his 2025 article, emphasizes NIST's deep influence on government systems. He notes NIST's special publication 863B establishes authentication assurance levels, rigorous benchmarks for identity verification. And NIST's special publication 800-53 Revision 4 guides security and privacy controls for all federal information systems. These aren't just suggestions for federal agencies. They represent the indispensable bedrock for the cybersecurity practices, defining the minimum bar.
Right. Despite all these governmental efforts and frameworks, information sharing remains a significant, persistent challenge, particularly between the public and private sectors. The 2006 Critical Infrastructure Source points out a major hurdle: the private sector's inherent reluctance to share sensitive info about cyber incidents or vulnerabilities. This often stems from fear of negative media exposure, harming profits, shareholder confidence, or the very real risk of proprietary data leaks if sensitive details become public. It's a delicate, often contentious balance between broader public good and immediate private commercial interests, a fundamental friction point.
That fear is completely understandable from a business perspective.
Yeah.
But given the interconnectedness you described, doesn't that reluctance pose a fundamental risk to the entire ecosystem? How do we bridge that gap when private profit motives clash with national security?
Well, that's where initiatives like Information Sharing and Analysis Centers, ISACs, come in. They exist specifically to promote this crucial information sharing among critical infrastructure sectors. There are dedicated ISACs for food, electricity, financial services, many others, creating trusted channels for industry members to share vital threat intelligence and best practices securely. Furthermore, the Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Protection Act of 2004 specifically requires the president to facilitate an information sharing environment, or IS, at various government levels and with the private entities, precisely aiming to break down those silos and foster a more collaborative defense posture. 5, advanced security paradigms and controls.
Okay, let's pivot now to some truly cutting-edge concepts that are fundamentally reshaping how we approach cybersecurity, especially within government and critical infrastructure. Rishabh Gupta, in his compelling 2025 paper, highlights Zero Trust Architecture, or ZTA, as a fundamental paradigm shift in government security strategy. It's a profound departure from the traditional perimeter-based model.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the core idea here?
That's an excellent question.
Yeah.
The core idea is exactly what the name implies. Never trust, always verify. Traditional security assumes everything inside the network perimeter can be trusted. Zero trust flips that, treats every user, device, application inside or outside the network as potentially hostile until proven otherwise. Organizations implementing comprehensive ZTA frameworks are seeing significant benefits. An average 50% reduction in breach costs, that's huge, and 35% faster threat detection and response.
Wow.
It's particularly effective in today's complex cloud-enabled environments where traditional perimeters often fail. Organizations report a remarkable 42% improvement in visibility across distributed cloud workloads, making it much harder for attackers to hide. It addresses the distributed, dynamic nature of modern systems, not an outdated fortress mentality.
So, if we strip away the jargon, what are the fundamental technical components that make up this powerful architecture?
The absolute cornerstone of ZTA is the principle of least privilege. This isn't just a recommendation, it's a foundational mandate. Users and systems get only the absolute minimum permissions needed for their authorized tasks, and critically, only for as long as needed. Gupta notes this extends to dynamic permission adjustment based on real-time risk assessment, constantly evaluating context. To give you a concrete example, the Department of Defense Zero Trust overlays mandate a minimum of 5 distinct authentication factors for high-security systems, including at least 2 biometric modalities.
My factors.
Yes. Ensuring elevated privileges are granted only when absolutely necessary for a specific purpose and immediately revoked after use drastically shrinks the attack surface and limits lateral movement if an attacker gets a foothold. Following directly from least privilege, ZTA implements this through robust network segmentation, often using highly granular microperimeters. Instead of broad, permeable zones, modern ZTA creates secure microperimeters around individual workloads, even individual applications. Each microperimeter enforces an average of 45 distinct security policies, creating isolated zones to restrict lateral movement.
So if one part is breached, it's contained.
Exactly. If an attacker compromises one small segment, they can't easily jump to another. The DoD Zero Trust overlays mandate specific, stringent segmentation requirements across 5 security levels. Levels 4 and 5 require complete isolation of critical assets via software-defined micro-segmentation, ensuring users and systems access only the specific resources absolutely required down to the packet level.
The third critical component, rounding out the ZTA triad, is resource protection. This enforces least privilege through continuous security posture assessment and just-in-time access provisioning. Access isn't just granted once, it's continuously evaluated minute by minute.
Right. Industry standards indicate effective resource protection requires evaluating 89 distinct security controls every 60 seconds. Constant vigilance. The DoD overlays specify even more advanced requirements, including strict maximum access durations. 4 hours for standard users. Just 2 hours for privileged accounts.
Very strict.
This dynamic approach ensures permissions are minimal and time-bound, automatically revoking access when tasks are done or risk levels change. It's security that's always vigilant, always adapting.
You know, for a long time, artificial intelligence and security felt like, well, science fiction. But how much of that promise is translating into tangible real-world defenses now, especially against these sophisticated threats? Where's the biggest impact?
That's a great observation. The reality is AI is no longer futuristic. It's fundamentally transforming cybersecurity right now. Gupta's 2025 research states unequivocally that AI-driven threat detection fundamentally transforms response mechanisms, moving us beyond reactive defense. These systems analyze vast amounts of security data using advanced machine learning to identify known malicious patterns and, critically, previously unknown anomalies signaling a novel attack. Machine learning models achieve an impressive 91.3% accuracy in threat detection. Even more advanced deep learning models show 94.2% accuracy in identifying this previously unknown attack pattern.
So they can spot new things.
Yes, that's the key insight. We're moving from purely reactive defense to proactive, predictive capabilities, anticipating the adversary's next move. These systems process an average of 7.8 terabytes of security telemetry daily, like analyzing thousands of movies worth of data every day, using advanced neural networks' complex digital brains to spot subtle anomalies invisible to human analysis.
That's an incredible amount of data. So if AI is crunching all that, what about behavioral analysis? How does AI help distinguish between a normal user and a sophisticated attacker trying to blend in?
Behavioral analysis systems, also using machine learning, are remarkably efficient at anomaly detection for that exact reason. Supervised learning models identify user behavior anomalies with 88.7% success rate, while keeping the false positive rate incredibly low at only 0.13%. Fewer false alarms.
That's important.
Very. What's truly impressive are recurrent neural networks, RNNs, for sequential pattern analysis. These can process 1.2 million events per second, evaluating each against 312 distinct behavioral indicators to understand context. They maintain dynamic behavioral baselines that adapt to changing user patterns every 900 seconds every 15 minutes, significantly reducing alert fatigue for human analysts through precise anomaly classification. It learns what's normal for you and spots deviations.
And what's the tangible bottom line impact of all this investment in AI-driven security? Does it really make a difference?
Absolutely. The impact is profound and quantifiable. Agencies investing in AI-driven solutions see significant operational improvements. A remarkable 67% reduction in mean time to detect MTTD, how quickly they spot an incident, and an equally impressive 71% reduction in mean time to respond, MTTR. Furthermore, automated response systems using reinforcement learning continuously improve decision accuracy. These systems are now capable of autonomous response to 82% of common attack patterns, neutralizing threats without human intervention.
Wow, automatic response.
Which saves agencies an average of $3.2 million annually through reduced incident response times and improved threat containment. AI isn't just defensive, it's critical for efficiency, resilience, and substantial cost savings.
It's clear AI is a game changer for detection and response, but it's not enough to set up defenses and walk away, right?
Yeah.
We need to continuously monitor and assess them. The threat landscape shifts daily. New vulnerabilities emerge. Constant vigilance is key.
Precisely. Gupta's 2025 research notes, federal agencies are deploying incredibly advanced next-generation security information and event management, SIEM, systems. These platforms process an average of 945,000 events per second, correlating events across an average of 15,000 endpoints. They maintain 99.99% uptime, processing roughly 2.1 petabytes of security log data monthly per agency.
That's a lot of data.
Equivalent to storing and analyzing millions of HD movies every month in real time. This volume is continuously analyzed to identify subtle patterns of suspicious activity.
And for identifying vulnerabilities, not just detecting ongoing attacks, how do they stay ahead of newly discovered weaknesses?
Modern vulnerability assessment frameworks are at the forefront of proactive defense. They use deep learning algorithms, achieving 96.8% accuracy in identifying critical vulnerabilities across complex systems. These systems can scan 10,000 assets in under 4 hours while maintaining detailed configuration states across 1,847 distinct security parameters. Beyond detection, they provide automated compliance verification against 2,346 distinct security controls, generating comprehensive security posture assessments every 300 seconds, every 5 minutes, with 99.7% accuracy and control validation.
Constant checks.
Yes. This continuous automated assessment is vital for federal agencies to keep pace with dynamic threats, manage complex regulations, and ensure defenses are always optimal configured. 6. Methods of securing network infrastructure, CON 2023.
Okay, so after exploring threats in these advanced paradigms, let's get down to the brass tacks. How do organizations specifically protect their networks day to day? Mohammed Jamshid Khan, in his 2023 article, outlined several crucial methods, the fundamental backbone of network security. First up are firewalls. Khan explains these act as a critical digital barrier between private internal networks and the public internet, enforcing security regulations by inspecting and filtering traffic. The first line of defense, like a gatekeeper. Different types exist. Packet filtering firewalls, the simplest. Decisions based on basic info, like IP addresses, ports, protocols. Like a bouncer checking ID only.
Right, very basic.
Stateful inspection firewalls, more advanced. Inspect packets in context, maintaining a dynamic view of the connection. More intelligent decisions, like a bouncer remembering if you've been in. Application level firewalls or proxy firewalls operate at the application layer, act as an intermediary, inspecting traffic based on specific protocols like HTTP, understands the content, like a bouncer listening to your conversation.
Deeper inspection.
And then next generation firewalls, NGFWs. Combine traditional firewall features with other advanced tech intrusion detection, antivirus, anti-malware, a comprehensive layered approach, the full security team.
Next, we have antivirus and anti-malware software. Fundamental programs designed to identify, prevent, remove malicious software viruses, trojans, worms, spyware, ransomware. They use various techniques. Signature-based detection relies on databases of known malware signatures, like a criminal database.
Matches known bad stuff.
Exactly. Heuristics looks for patterns or code characteristics common in malware, even if the signature isn't known. And behavioral analysis continuously monitors program behavior in real time to identify suspicious actions, even from unknown threats. Regular, often daily updates are absolutely critical for effective protection against the constant stream of new threats. Without updates, even the best software is outmatched.
Encryption is another absolutely fundamental method. Khan describes it as converting readable plain text into unreadable ciphertext without a specific decryption key. Ensures confidentiality, integrity, like scrambling a message, how it works. Uses complex mathematical algorithms and secret encryption keys. The key is confidential, needed to encrypt and decrypt. Types. Conn outlines two main types. Symmetric encryption, same secret key for encrypting and decrypting. Fast for large data, but needs a secure way to share the key, like a shared secret handshake.
Secure key exchange is the challenge there.
Right. Then asymmetric encryption, or public key cryptography, uses two related keys, a public key shared freely for encrypting, a private key kept secret for decrypting. More secure for communication without a pre-shared secret. Ideal for initial handshakes online. Applications. Encryption is everywhere. SSL TLS securing your browser sessions, VPNs for secure remote access, email encryption, full disk encryption safeguarding stored data, the invisible shield.
Following on from encryption, virtual private networks, VPNs, are crucial tools. Conn explains VPNs establish a secure private connection over a public network, like the internet, leveraging encryption to create a secure encrypted tunnel. Ensures all data transmitted remains confidential and protected from eavesdropping, even over insecure public networks. Applications. Very versatile. Secure remote access for employees connecting to corporate resources. Securing data over public Wi-Fi. Bypassing network restrictions or censorship. Connecting multiple geographically dispersed private networks.
Lots of uses.
Types include remote access VPNs for individual users, site-to-site VPNs connecting entire networks like branch offices, specialized intranet and extranet VPNs connecting departments or external partners. Properly configured VPNs are essential for protecting data in transit.
Then there are intrusion detection and prevention systems, IDPSs. Conn states these are sophisticated solutions designed to detect and, for prevention systems, actively blunt unauthorized access, use, or disruption. The proactive alarm system and defensive line, how they work. Continuously monitor network traffic for threats. Two main methods. Signature-based detection looks for known malware signatures or attack patterns like a virus scanner. Effective against known threats.
But not new ones.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's anomaly-based detection, uses machine learning and statistics to identify deviations from normal baseline behavior. Might indicate a novel threat, like noticing someone walking through the building at 3 a.m. applications. Deployed to monitor and secure networks in real time, analyze traffic for suspicious activity, prevent data theft and intrusion, provide immediate alerts, an essential added layer of defense.
Identity and access management, IAM, is absolutely vital and foundational, as Conn emphasizes. Deals comprehensively with controlling and protecting digital identities and who has access to what. IAM encompasses processes, tech, policies governing who gets access to what resources and what actions they can take. Three core pillars. Authentication verifies identity, proving you are who you say you are. Authorization determines what actions or resources users can access once identified, what you can do. And access control, the enforcement mechanism applying those permissions. Ultimately, IAM ensures only authorized users access sensitive data and systems, preventing misuse, theft, unauthorized modification.
Building directly on IAM, we have Privileged Access Management, PAM. Conn highlights PAM as a specialized framework for securing and meticulously controlling access for users with administrative or elevated privileges, those holding the keys to the kingdom.
Right, the high-risk account.
Exactly. PAM uses strong authentication, granular authorization, comprehensive auditing to minimize the severe risk from compromising these powerful accounts. PAM is critical because a Forrester study found 90% of data breaches involved privileged access abuse.
90%? That's staggering.
It is. Moreover, Gartner reported by 2025, 99% of cloud security failures would be the customer's fault, often due to mismanaging privileged access in the cloud. Starkly underscores PAM's criticality, especially for cloud. Reduces the attack surface by rigorously limiting and monitoring these powerful accounts. Contains the blast radius.
Regular software updates are absolutely foundational. Conn underscores this as crucial, not just a suggestion, paramount. Essential for diligently fixing vulnerabilities and patching security holes actors could exploit. CISA found 85% of cyber attacks in a previous year exploited vulnerabilities with a patch available for at least 3 months.
3 months, just sitting there.
Exactly. Shows having updates isn't enough. Applying them promptly, consistently across all systems is paramount. Delaying patches is like leaving the front door open when the burglar has the key.
Penetration testing, or pen testing, another critical proactive measure. Conn describes it as simulated cyber attacks performed ethically on a system, network, or app. Goal. Identify vulnerabilities exploitable by real malicious actors. Should be done regularly. An internal audit of defenses, stages, reconnaissance, gathering info about the target. scanning using tools to find weaknesses, open ports, exploitation, attempting to penetrate by exploiting identified vulnerabilities within agreed boundaries, types, black box, tester has no prior knowledge, external attacker, gray box, limited knowledge, insider partner, white box, complete internal knowledge, malicious insider. Each offers a vital perspective.
Finally, employee awareness and training is absolutely paramount, cannot be overstated. Khan stresses this is crucially important, as employees can often be the weakest link in sophisticated defenses. Even advanced tech controls can be bypassed by cunning social engineering targeting an uninformed employee. Training isn't a one-off, covers ongoing topics, strong passwords, multi-factor authentication, identifying phishing scams, data protection best practices, recognizing and resisting social engineering. Gartner suggests annual mandatory cybersecurity training for all employees is a critical, non-negotiable component. It's about empowering every individual to be a frontline defender against threats targeting human vulnerabilities. 7. Practical applications in public services and beyond.
So if we pull all these sophisticated security measures and frameworks together, how do they actually translate into real-world applications for critical public services, where the stakes are incredibly high, touching millions of lives?
Rishabh Gupta's 2025 paper illuminates how government digital identity platforms are rapidly evolving to meet complex security and privacy challenges. For instance, the GSA's Digital Identity Risk Management Framework requires identity proofing at 3 distinct assurance levels, each with escalating security needs. Level 3 systems, handling highly sensitive transactions, require minimum 80 bits of entropy for cryptographic security.
80 bits? That sounds like a lot.
It's immense. Provides cryptographic strength so great, even supercomputers would take longer than the age of the universe to crack. Virtually unassailable by brute force. These platforms handle incredible scale, processing 2.7 million identity verification requests daily, with 99th percentile transactions under 2.5 seconds. High security and remarkable efficiency.
That level of security and speed is impressive. But beyond initial proofing, what ongoing security measures maintain that trust and protect sensitive digital identities?
To maintain that high trust level, the GSA framework mandates multi-layered authentication, minimum 3 independent factors for critical transactions. Maybe something you know, password, something you have, mobile device security key, something you are, biometrics.
Like fingerprint or facial recognition?
Exactly. Modern biometric verification use here achieves incredibly low false match rates, below 1 in 1,250,000 attempts, near perfect accuracy. Furthermore, they use sophisticated privacy-preserving protocols, verifying 23 distinct identity attributes while revealing only the absolute minimum necessary info for a transaction, processing about 1.2 million privacy-protected transactions daily. This meticulous approach ensures strong security and deep respect for individual privacy, paramount when handling personal data nationally.
This level of detail really shows the immense sophistication needed for securing digital identities in government context. Monumental data volume and sensitivity, public trust is everything, a foundational element.
Beyond identity, protecting emergency response systems represents another pinnacle of critical infrastructure security. Demands extreme reliability, resilience. Fortinet's analysis, cited by Gupta, indicates modern emergency response systems must maintain 99.9999% availability.
5 nines. That's almost perfect uptime.
Less than 6 minutes of downtime per year. While processing 28,000 emergency requests per minute during normal operations, reflects the non-negotiable need for these systems to be operational always, especially during crises where every second counts.
That's incredible demand. But during a large-scale emergency, coordination across agencies and responders is paramount. What's crucial for achieving that real-time data sync and secure communication under extreme pressure?
Real-time data synchronization is absolutely essential. Fortinet's assessment shows critical systems maintain sync across an average of 847 distributed nodes, ensuring dispatched units and command centers have the most current info, achieved with maximum allowed latency of only 50 milliseconds for critical updates faster than a blink. Mobile access systems, crucial for field personnel, support up to 52,000 concurrent field connections. Authentication systems validate credentials against 15 distinct factors in under 900 milliseconds. Rapid, secure access for personnel on the ground. This seamless, instant flow of accurate information is often the difference between success and failure.
And what about resilience? After an attack or disaster, systems need to survive, recover quickly, continue functioning. What ensures that robust continuity?
For resilience, current federal standards mandate critical systems maintain continuous replication across minimum 3 geographically distributed locations. Vital redundancy. If one site is compromised or destroyed, operations continue seamlessly from another. Automated failover systems achieve transition times under 15 seconds, minimizing disruption.
That's fast failover.
Supports incredibly stringent recovery time objectives, RTO, of only 45 seconds for critical systems, must be fully operational again in under a minute. They also maintain real-time replication of about 2.4 petabytes of emergency response data across sites. Plus, redundant communication systems use automated path selection across average 7 distinct transmission mediums, satellite, fiber, radio, cellular, etc., processing 8.2 terabytes of encrypted communications daily during large-scale emergencies. This comprehensive approach, redundancy, rapid recovery, multipath communication is vital for national security and public safety. Outro.
What a deep dive. We've journeyed from foundational definitions of critical infrastructure to the intricacies of zero-trust architecture, the power of AI-driven threat detection. We've explored how vital our energy grids, communication networks, their complex supply chains are, and the immense invisible efforts undertaken daily to protect them.
Reflecting on all we've covered, the sheer scale and intricate complexity of this challenge really come into focus. As the DOE report emphasized, energy sector digital component supply chain risks have profoundly expanded. Vulnerabilities increase as systems become more interconnected, remotely operated. The threat landscape, as Mohammad Jamshid Khan detailed, is constantly diversifying from basic malware to sophisticated blended cyber-physical attacks. This raises an important question we must continually ask. How can we, as a society, keep pace with such rapidly evolving, multifaceted threats? Static defenses won't cut it.
Exactly. The relentless commitment of federal agencies, private industry, academia, seen through DOE's proactive programs like Energy CyberSense and Citrix, the widespread adoption of robust NIST standards highlighted by Rishabh Gupta, that's all essential, painstakingly building the advanced technical backbone of our defense. But let's not forget the human element. From continuously training every employee to fostering better, timely information sharing among sometimes reluctant private partners remains profoundly critical. Ultimately, we are only as strong as our weakest link, whether that's code or a person.
Yeah, if we connect this to the bigger picture, securing our digital backbone isn't just a technical problem solvable with new software. It's a strategic national security imperative requiring constant adaptation, profound collaboration across all sectors, significant sustained investment. The reliance on foreign suppliers, the frustrating opacity of complex digital supply chains, the concentrated cyber risk in ubiquitous components, all underscore the urgent, continuous need for vigilance and innovation. Truly, knowledge is our first, most crucial line of defense. Understanding these complex interdependencies and the nature of evolving threats is paramount.
So, what does this all mean for you, the listener, in your daily life? It means being aware, understanding the immense stakes involved, recognizing that protecting our digital infrastructure is a shared responsibility, extending from the highest government levels down to every individual using a connected device. Your vigilance, even in seemingly small ways like practicing good cyber hygiene, contributes directly to this larger vital effort. Thank you for joining us on the Security Nexus Deep Dive. We hope this deep dive provided valuable insights and an expanded understanding of the immense ongoing efforts to safeguard our digital future. If you want to learn more about strategic security, remember to visit thesecuritynexus.net for more clear, accessible, actionable knowledge. Until next time, keep digging, keep learning, and above all, stay secure.